Hello and welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Rob.
And I'm Brad.
Hello, mate.
Hello.
How are you good?
Yeah. I'm good. Yeah. I'm always good. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm excited.
Yeah. It is warm today.
It's really, it's horrible. Yeah.
It's not fun.
No. I had to go outside today and everything. It's horrible.
Oh, I know, right? Like some sort of horse thief.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I mean, it's to the point now where I've actually considered wearing shorts to work. And I never thought I'd be that guy. I never thought it.
No.
And yet,
no.
Here I am considering giving serious credence to these ideas.
I don't know. I've ever worn shorts outside of a swimming pool, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think maybe in Hawaii I did actually, because that was probably the hottest I've ever been. Yeah.
Seems fair.
Yeah. But even when I was in Miami, I was still wearing like cargo pants and stuff. Just no one wants to see my hideous pasty legs.
Well, you know, maybe you're giving the people of Miami too little credit. I don't know.
Maybe it's the uglier people than me.
Now you've got a few books under your belt, maybe go back and see what happens. Maybe people are like, show those legs. Show those legs. They probably won't, but you won't know until you try. So
your monsters have got quite a lot of legs on average.
Yeah. I'm solo this week. Jen's in California at the moment. She's in LA, California at the moment.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I'm on my own. Been on my own for a few days. Haven't starved or killed myself accidentally yet.
Awesome. That is a result.
Yeah, I thought so.
Seriously, going on my Sims track record, that's a result.
Well, quite so. You know, it's always a dice roll when it comes to me and functioning like an adult. So
yeah,
I was quite pleased that it turned out the way.
Yeah, I've known you for a while now.
So this is episode 126, and to kick us off, we've actually got two new reviews to read. So one of them is the one that I mentioned that was sort of on its way, but I didn't know when. It arrived true to form just after we finished recording and just after I'd locked the show down. So I thought we would save it for this week. So
okay, cool.
The first one's a familiar name.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So let's have a look.
Do you want to do the honors on this one?
I'll do this one. Yeah, sure. So this reads, the greatest Star Wars podcast out there. It's high praise indeed. 5 stars. Talk Star Wars is simply the best Star Wars podcast out there. And I should know. I used to be a host on the show.
Well, look who's come crawling back.
Hello, what have we here? This podcast has the most insightful and hilarious Star Wars commentary delivered in a family-friendly, listener-first manner. Rob and Brad are doing the Dark Lord's work. Now on to the self-promotion. Seems only fair. We do make this promise. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to hear my latest podcast dedicated to genre movies, TV shows, and all things geek, then head to patreon.com/markgodsif and get access to the patron-exclusive podcast, blog, and vlog series. That's patreon.com/markgodsif. May the force be with you. That's from Mark Godsif.
Cool. Yeah. Glad he's still doing stuff.
The real Mark Godsif.
The real Mark Godsif. Yes. Okay.
Impersonation's a big problem.
Yeah.
And you know this, I think.
I do, yes. Yeah.
I've never had this problem, but
no.
It's not worth impersonation, I guess.
No, I've not had anyone try and impersonate me, but I've kind of preempted it.
Yeah, there you go. Just in case. You never want to just hedge your bets against it. Like, it's a smart bet. So thank you for that, Mark. It's very kind of you.
It's just fun.
You know.
You're sick of fan.
You know, not without good reason, I would say. We are spectacular. But,
I think so.
You know, I can vouch for the quality of his Patreon. I've been on and put my dollar down myself. So, you know, it's well worth doing. And it starts at $1. So that's always nice. You know, and if you've already got a Patreon set up, which I do, $1 is a drop in the bucket. And well worth it. Do you want to read the next review?
Yeah, sure. I'll make the screen go blank, but I can.
Sure.
Well, hello there. In my many years of podcast listening, I've never felt compelled to write a single review until now. This is by far the best Star Wars podcast I've ever listened to. I grew up breathing Star Wars and discussing it with my friends. It has always been a fun pastime. Getting older, it's hard to find the time for such things. Listening to Rob and Brad has brought some of that back for me. It's gratifying to hear them talk Star Wars as my friends and I had. The only thing that exceeds their knowledge and passion for Star Wars is their commitment to the listeners. They rely much on the fans to keep the podcast fun and engaging with their thoughts and questions. They've made a loyal fan out of me, and I look forward to seeing where this goes. Thank you, Rob, Brad, and the community for this amazing podcast. May the force be with you always. That's from Moonex. That's very kind.
It's very kind. So that's Adam Kay, who's been writing in a couple of times.
Okay, cool.
So he's got a question later on in the show notes. But Adam, thank you so much for that. That made my day when that came through. Really lovely to read. You know, obviously it's no secret that we kind of front load the podcast with listener stuff.
Because I really thought you were going to say, obviously it's no secret that we are the best Star Wars podcast.
I don't want to get into some, you know, podcast war. There's plenty of those going on.
There's plenty of those. Yeah,
exactly. We're not short of those in fandom. We can just let them fight. And we will be over here reaping all the benefits.
We'll just be a little shadow collector.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it works for us. So, as I say, you know, it's been no secret that we've always tried to front load the show with listener stuff first.
Mm-hmm.
Mark always did it. I've been very keen to keep it going. Clearly, it works. Clearly, it works. People like it. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adam, thank you so much for that. Like I say, it was a really, really lovely read when it came through, and it had to go in the show as soon as possible because you can't take praise like that lightly, because then you stop getting it eventually.
Yeah,
I'm guessing. I've never.
That's awesome. Very nice to hear. It's always nice to hear that. Because working in any kind of publishing field, I've found that sometimes it feels a bit like you're just kind of screaming into a hurricane. So
any
kind of feedback you get is lovely, because it's nice to know you're not just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. And if I ever do start my own solo show, it may just be called Shouting Into the Wind. In fact, it's not bad.
I'd offer to do it with you, but that would defeat the purpose.
It certainly would. Shouting into, that's not bad. Anyway, store that for mental note for later on. Right, so let's dive into
he's got a to-do list, and at the bottom he's just written shout into the wind.
I don't need prompting. It's just that happens organically. Right, so let's jump into listener stuff. Okay, so I've managed to lay that out a little bit weird, but that's okay. So Vesuvi writes, thanks Rob, thanks Brad.
You're welcome.
Saskatchewan Entertainment Expo just announced that Billy Dee Williams had to pull out of his scheduled appearance at the Canadian convention in mid-September due to a film schedule conflict. So this is either more confirmation of a potential role in episode 9 or more web-enhanced headless chicken fodder. Gobble it up, hungry biddies. Doing my part to return sanity too, while simultaneously stoking idle gossip, Art Vesuvi, as old, pebble-filled and balanced as the prime Jedi mosaic on the floor of the Akto Temple. Wow, okay, that went weird. That went weird fast. Pebble-filled.
Are you tired?
Pebble filled. That's a logistical question I don't want to get into.
Let's
gloss over that bit. But yes, the Billy Dee Williams thing did the rounds this week. There's a link to a story about it in the show notes at the very bottom, because it was originally going to be a news piece, and then I got Vesuvi email, so that sort of pushed it up to the front.
Cool.
It does lend a lot of credence to this whole thing, doesn't it?
I think it's pretty much definite. And for that, I'm struggling to think for a reason they wouldn't have Lando in 9 now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like the only thing I can think of is that they finally got the green light for Alien Intruder 2, but I find the idea of that, I don't know, a little bit unpalatable and a little bit hard to believe. Just call me a cynic, but that's how I see it.
Yeah.
You know? I think, do you know, as a sort of slight tangent, I feel like we're approaching a bad movie singularity.
Yeah. Cool.
I think it's the Meg that's going to kill it.
Why would you say that?
Just because it's a AAA budgeted bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize we've had stuff that's kind of got in that direction before, but this feels like one of the highest profile in recent memory.
It's probably the biggest. It's not a kaiju movie, because obviously we've had like the legendary Godzilla and Shin Godzilla.
Yeah.
In recent years, but I know what you mean. It's the first time we've had a monster movie, not without getting into kaiju size, realistically, since something like The Relic or Lake Placid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's been a while.
Obviously,
since you've had something like this.
The Asylum and Sci-Fi Channel put out a lot of these, kind of post-pub B movies,
but never AAA budgeted ones with A-list actors like Jason Statham.
That is for Deep Blue Sea, I suppose, might be more recent than the other two I mentioned.
Okay, yeah.
I'm quite looking forward to it, to be honest.
I'm kind of cautiously optimistic, but I do...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I've noticed the guys who like Asylum and the sci-fi movies, like Waspinado and Is a Real One, and Reptile, stuff like that, will it's a tongue-in-cheek kind of, or Sharknado. It's a tongue-in-cheek kind of enjoyment. That's absolutely fine. I don't believe the people working on this movie genuinely believe they're making A-class movies. They know they're making camp, the modern-day equivalent of campy 50s drive-in B-movies.
Yeah.
In the case of Wasp-Nado, it's almost literally a B-movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was called something else originally. Tsunami, that's what it was called originally. Man. It changed to Wasp-Nado.
I think that's a good change because that's a little more, a little less on the nose, but at the same time, somehow less worse.
Yeah. But what I've found is, I mean, I've written one shark book, North Sea Hunters, and the Cat with the Giant Bug.
Yep.
Books as well.
Books.
And from what I've discovered, the fans that are attracted towards the literary side of it don't seem to enjoy it unironically, and maybe because in a book it is more, it's pitched how you want it to be. You can be play for laughs, or it can be more serious in your head.
Totally.
And the fans that are attracted to the books like them with a little more gravitas than The Asylum produced them. And the Meg is based on Meg by Steve Alton, which has a very dedicated, I think they did like 5 or 6 books in the series at the end, and the fan base is pretty strong.
Yeah.
So to see that kind of movie treated as seriously as literary fans would perhaps like it to be, I think it's going to be an interesting kind of shift.
Yeah, it's an interesting experiment. I'm cautiously optimistic about the film being enjoyable. It's more, there's something about that as a gesture that just feels kind of weird, and I can't quite articulate it, but like I say, it feels like that will be the kind of thing that will kind of, for lack of a better expression, break immersion and kind of make people go, oh, okay, and then there'll be some change in the dynamics of how bad movies have been and how they were going to
be. Do you think they'll stop making the kind of tongue-in-cheek ones? Is that what you're implying?
I don't know. Maybe they'll lose something in their kind of, if it depends, I guess, on how the movie does. If it completely does really well, then that might affect you know, sci-fi and The Asylum and places like that are making these movies. But if it doesn't do very well, I guess theoretically nothing might change.
I think the chances are nothing will change. It will come along and it'll either be moderately successful or it will go off like a damp squib and will be, you know, Pandas on the Tank will be on Sci-Fi Channel next week. Snakes on a Plane was a real one.
There's
Flight of the Living Dead or something on the plane.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
It's
not good.
No, it's not. No. So I think if Meg does all right, if Meg crashes and burns, I don't think anything will change in kind of the American kaiju monster movie, creature feature vibe. On the other hand, if it's lightning in a bottle to the extent something like 2008's Iron Man was, then who knows what's going to happen. Yeah. It could make more money. At this rate, it might mean it makes more money than the average Star Wars movie.
Maybe, because all it has to do is land in China.
Not Tank. Yeah, true.
Because landing in China makes a huge difference to the box office now. And that's
I would watch the hell out of Lando in China.
Yeah, I would watch that. Hello, what have we here?
cool. Everyone listening has now got that little sketch in their head, and everyone's it's totally different.
I like to leave them vague. Just because then people, like you said, people can just play it for laughs, or they can do it completely straight.
Yeah.
Whatever they want to do is up to them, you know?
Yeah. Billy Williams cancelled his community appearance.
It looks very likely.
Yes, it does. Actors do drop out of conventions when they have filming schedules because they will go for whatever's paying more. When they're higher ranking actors, the convention bookers know that and probably have a nice little break clause in their contract as well. So everyone's happy.
I'm sure they do.
And you could understand it. I mean, like, I think Megan Fox is doing London Film and Comic Con. No one would be shocked if she dropped out
because she's
got to go make another Transformers movie or something, Visionaries or whatever she's doing this week. And she just seems to do 90s cartoon movies. Yeah. She's doing Turtles and Transformers and, I don't know, maybe she's doing Samurai Pizza Cats or something.
Well, when they jump the shark, that would be when they would leap over the Meg because they physically jump the shark.
But on the counter argument to that is, like I said, Billy D's 81. He's not going to get many film offers, realistically.
It's true.
He's certainly, at the age of 81, if I had a choice of doing an acting role or sitting in a chair while people handed me money all weekend, it would have to be something big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's either going to be that or Batman, I guess.
I'm speculating here. Billy, if you're listening, Billy J, however you like to be called, just let me know if I'm wrong.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, I have no reason to believe Billy D. Williams isn't listening. So
we can't prove the opposite.
We can't, certainly not. None of the analytics I've got are that detailed. So, you know, there you go. He's looking increasingly likely, isn't he? We can say that.
I think I said in a previous episode, it really bothers me that it took this to get him involved.
Yeah.
But they even seemed to consider him. And like I say, I don't remember the ins and outs. If he was invited, if he was considered, then fine.
Yeah.
But it really does feel like a bit of a backhanded compliment getting because we can't get Gary.
Yeah, it was. There were rumours doing the rounds that he was in for 8, and I think he came out and said, you know, I'm not. And I can't remember at the time. At the time, I seem to recall there was a sort of suggestion that he'd been, you know, or they haven't called. So it was that kind of reasoning rather than like, oh, they offered it to me and I turned it down. It was more they haven't been in touch about it. So I don't know if they just hadn't got anything in mind like that. Maybe they couldn't figure out a way to work him in. Maybe now they will, you know, the only upside to it I mean, obviously, besides the fact we might get more Lando, which is I'm good with, you know, I'm happy with that.
Lando's kind of underrated. I think he gets dismissed or just forgotten a lot of the time, which is a real shame.
Yeah, it is. But I think, apart from the upside of more Lando, this may, you know, if he says yes to it, JJ might have some flexibility to kind of, you know, you could almost have him supervise a big space battle, and it would actually be quite nice and thematic to have him in the Admiral's chair where Ackbar sat while Lando was on the Falcon and have somebody like a Poe Dameron or a Finn on the Falcon as a sort of rite of passage.
I think if Lando's going to be involved in Resistance to any degree, then that's really the only role that would make sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think anything else, it seems unlikely, you know.
Yeah. He would be. If he's left for a Rebellion or Resistance or Republic, and gone off and done something else entirely, then that's obviously a bit more open. Sure. But like I say, if he's going to be quite an old general, field marshal, admiral, really, he's not going to be boots on the ground, is he?
No. And they may bring him back into the fold in that role because they're, you know, the theme of the movie ultimately is much like you've alluded to, and why it's kind of annoying that it took this to get him in. Assuming obviously all this stuff bears fruit, it's they're desperate. In the movie, that's the theme as well. You remember we were talking about it last week, where the great thing about Episode 7 is that the marketing was the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Luke?
Yeah,
the marketing for this, then the build up to this might also be the plot of the movie, and that the Resistance is desperate for personality, you know, for personalities to kind of help them to help them win.
Yeah.
And in the same way, Lucasfilm need that kind of nostalgic kick.
Yeah, totally.
And they would have had it with Leia, but they don't. Obviously, unfortunately, they don't. But you know, they need something to feel that kick. And you know, it is annoying that they've kind of he almost feels like an afterthought.
Yeah, that's really rankles me, to be honest.
Yeah, it's what's worse about it, I guess, is if it wasn't for the unfortunate events around Carrie, maybe he never would have made his way into
that's
movies.
Really, really annoying, isn't it? That and Nine Numb's been in them, and he hasn't. Give it to a puppet before you find Billy D.
They're a lot easier to cast.
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely spot on. I think if Carrie was still with us, then they probably wouldn't have bothered Lando at all.
Maybe. This is it, you know. I mean,
and that's really...
I don't know...
Family-friendly radio show comment.
Do you know, like... Did he voice himself in Rebels? He did, right?
He did, yes.
Yeah, so he's obviously got some sort of working relationship with Lucasfilm. So it's not like nothing's been frosty and bridges burned up until that point.
Not that I've ever heard. No,
it's
I
not
think
like
I
a Dave Prowse situation.
I'm not just saying, isn't that really? Yeah, Dave Prowse.
Bless him.
Is has been a little abrasive at times, apparently.
It's been heard. You know, it's
yeah,
been, it's
I don't
been
know rumbled. If it was ins and outs, but I know they don't get along.
Yeah, likewise. I don't know what the situation is with that one, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for that, Vasubi. Set us on a little bit of a tear, but, you know, we've been known to do that from time to time. So our next question is from Arthur Crouch. This came to us via Twitter. Did you want to read this one?
Sure, sure. Let me pop the screen over. Oh, I was at the tweet there, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. At Talk Star Wars from Arthur Crouch. How does Obi-Wan know Anakin is Vader? Is it as simple as sensing? Then shouldn't he sense Obi-Wan? Thinking out loud regarding movie possibilities for leaving Luke. Is that in reference to episode 4?
No, it's basically, we got a couple of tweets about this because we talked last week about how Obi-Wan doesn't quite work for us because it means he has to leave Tatooine to make it interesting, and that doesn't work. And anybody he interacts with has to turn up dead because there's no way he can take the risk of sort of blowing his cover. Yeah. We got a few replies back to that, a mix of totally agree and I don't know. I suppose they could still make it work, which is, you know, fair enough. Yeah. Until we see it on screen, we've got no.
If I can history. Make it work, then yeah, I'm totally. All in. I'm just. I can't make it work.
It doesn't it doesn't quite gel for me in my head. It's a little bit like over fan service. You know, it's like one of those things it sounds really condescending, but it's not meant to be. It's one of those things you might think you want until you get it and then be like, oh, okay, that's kind of dry and not very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I feel like in episode 3, he hears Vader on the little holo communication thing he sees, where it's Anakin. It goes from, they're at the Jedi Temple, Obi-Wan and Yoda, and they've rerouted the signal to warn people away. Incidentally, I'm reading Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader, The Rise of the Dark Lord, or whatever it is, by James Luceno, the Legends.
Oh, the old Legends one. Yeah. I have fond memories of that.
Yeah, I've got the audio book on with Jonathan Davis as the narrator, and he does Dark Side. Nice. And his, I tell you what, right? Eventually, they will have to replace James Earl Jones. I am going to make a point when they do to push for Jonathan Davis with the whatever modulation they've added because he's bang on, absolutely super. Bang on. He's great, absolutely amazing. Fantastic. Anyway,
what?
Yeah, what? or your brother? Maybe your brother would.
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those things. I think you used to do when we did stand up tours. You do an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, which was pretty damn good. And you said yours is actually quite high.
Yes.
On his register, and people will try to kind of screw up doing an Arnie impression by thinking it's manly and deep, and his voice isn't really. Not, and Vader's kind of the same. Yeah. Vader isn't always a bass rumble. He's especially in A New Hope, he's quite a high register, really.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And what's interesting is this is one of the reasons I feel like they will eventually recast it, because in Rogue One, he did start to sound like an old black man. And understandably, James Earl Jones is an old black man with a tremendous voice. Yeah. Yeah. I realize it's voice acting, so you can't always tell, but yeah, he is.
Yeah.
I can hear it in Rogue One. You can hear his kind of speaking voice. It's just not the same anymore.
Okay.
And it's still good, and it's still
okay for the small bits, but you probably couldn't last a movie, is what
exactly,
you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when it comes to, say, this is another quick aside, but when it comes to the inevitable recasting, if they ever do decide to go down that route, Jonathan Davis with modulation on is my pick because he is absolutely bang on. So they reroute the signal and warn the Jedi away from the temple when he was surviving Jedi. And I could have sworn they go into the video archives.
Was it almost like the CCTV?
Yeah, basically. And they get one of Anakin killing Jedi.
Yeah.
Followed immediately by Palpatine and Anakin in, I guess it's in Palpatine's office.
Must be, or Palpatine came to the Jedi Temple. That's not really clear. Yeah. Which is also totally possible.
Yeah, totally plausible. And I'm sure he uses Darth. I'm sure he calls him Darth Vader because Obi-Wan then references it on Mustafar.
Yes.
Yeah. So he knows that Anakin's Vader.
Yep.
Whether he knows, I guess he must know that inside the suit is Anakin.
I think it's pretty clear they don't encounter each other between Mustafar and the Death Star.
Sure.
Because Darth Vader's line is, "I felt something, a presence I've not felt since."
Yeah.
And he kind of trails off, probably going, "I had legs. No, it's not yet." And
I remember it being hot.
Yeah. Something ground.
There was a Stevie Wonder song on.
Wonder song, yeah.
The one that escaped me.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of mystic force explained away that Darth Vader can sense Obi-Wan's presence.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect Obi-Wan senses the same, because doesn't he say something to Luke just as he's leaving to go and shut the tractor down?
Maybe, yeah. I'm trying to think. It's been a while since I've watched New Hope.
I've watched the first half of it today with my daughter, but we didn't get that far, unfortunately.
No.
I don't think we're off Tatooine yet, because we have to break it down into chunks for a small person.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
She pointed at the screen and said R2, which was really cute.
Bless. I think that's the trick. You know, he knows that because he's heard it mentioned in episode 3. And like I say, although it's not, you could be forgiven for thinking that Anakin didn't survive and Palpatine's just kind of built this, because there's a lot of, especially in this book I'm reading now, this Legends one, there was a lot of stuff about, like, is it actually an android? Is it a person is that even a person inside?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And I don't think it was even entirely clear to people in A New Hope. I think people sort of saw Vader in that sort of armor and stuff like that. And they didn't necessarily, you know, they could have been forgiven for thinking he wasn't entirely human. Because he doesn't have any sort of, it's not like you ever see a hand kind of pop through or like a bit of shoulder.
Here, I found the line from Ben.
Okay.
She says, "Be patient, Luke. Stay and watch over the droids. But they must be delivered safely, or other star systems will suffer the same fate as all around. Your destiny lies along a different path than mine."
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of, the force will be with you always, which kind of implies
he knows
has
he's not
picked
coming
up
back
on something.
He knows he's not coming back, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, it makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as to shouldn't he sense Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
So this came up in this book. Because it's not a particularly long book, because it's going through, it's about 6 hours, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not long.
It's probably 300 pages. Yeah.
So I've been going through it, and one of the things I picked up on, which I was sort of surprised, they addressed it, and they said basically that Vader in his internal monologues would steer clear of planets that sort of made his rage strengthen. So Naboo, and he mentions Tatooine specifically as somewhere he's going to avoid. Because it has too many bad memories associated with it.
Sand.
Yeah, sand. It's just a whole planet of it. And it's
Tusken,
like,
Raiders,
come on.
Yeah.
But it does seem like they've kind of left that in, even though they've never officially clarified it. I think that's kind of the implication, is that he's got too many bad memories associated with some of these places, and he's not going to go there of his own volition.
Yeah.
Because he could have gone to Tatooine himself.
He does in the Marvel Star Wars comic series.
After Obi-Wan's dead.
But that's after the Death Star's destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to track down Luke.
Yeah. In which case,
I think the first story arc is him finding out that the pilot's name is Skywalker.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, I know the one you mean. Yeah, I think I read that that part of it.
Kind of goes postal on a Tusken Raider village as well, which is
pretty fun.
It's a bit like the corridor scene from Rogue One.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just one of those. Every now and again with Vader, you forget, right?
Yeah, and sometimes you just do something, you're like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's very easy to forget that Vader's a bad guy, and I think that's one of the best things Rogue One did.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's.
Because Rogue One, when you have that corridor scene, everyone said, oh, it made Vader scary again, and people seem to kind of lay a lot of the problems at the feet of the prequel trilogy, kind of having shown him as a
they humanized him.
A little bit whiny, a little bit emo.
Annoyingly
cutesy in the first movie. And I don't think that was it. I think it's because you see Darth Vader nearly every day.
Yeah.
He's birthday party balloons, he's kids' T-shirts, he's pencil toppers, he's Pez dispensers.
Yeah.
And it's just familiarity breeds contempt.
Mm.
And that was one of the most jarring things about the corridor scene was that, yo, he is evil. He was always, but you forget because you see him so often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You do take it for granted. And then he turns up and wrecks the place. And, you forget up until that point just how much of a stone cold badass he is.
Mm. You played Legion, yeah?
Legion? No, I haven't, no.
No, I've played, I think my dad's been in the Empire both times, and Vader's just massacres entire squads.
Yeah. Nice. So,
not from my perspective, it's not that game.
No, sure, but it's fun. you don't have to win for it to be fun.
No,
otherwise,
no,
I'd just stop gaming years ago.
I'd just join the club. Yeah.
As the internet's
I don't
question,
game because I'm going to win. I game because it's funny.
So, as is the other part of his question was, shouldn't Vader be able to sense Obi-Wan?
No, it's stated in dialogue that he does.
Yeah, but I think it's more. I don't think it's.
He even says, "I've been waiting for you, Obi-Wan."
Yeah, and also, I think one of the things that we've forgotten about is that it's not as simple as Jedi can just detect one person across the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
What we have, it takes until they get on into orbit around the Hoth system before Vader goes, that's it, the Rebel base is there, Skywalker is with them. It's until the shuttle's going past on Endor that Vader realizes Luke's on that ship.
Yeah, there's a proximity there.
Yeah, and there are powerful Force users who can do things like Snoke on the same ship as Hux can slam him around.
Yeah,
but he's on the same ship again, and he's powerful enough to manipulate objects from far away, much in the same way as Vader with Ozzel.
Yeah,
in Empire, and as a result, we forget that there is a certain proximity limit to this stuff. And the reason that Obi-Wan can feel Alderaan being destroyed is, one, they're in hyperspace on their way there, and it's an entire planet.
It's an entire planet,
full of, probably a few Force-sensitive people. So, people with higher midichlorian counts.
Odds are, So I'm just trying to, if there's another line, the reason I've popped off the screen is there's another line of Obi-Wan dialogue.
That's fine. Before. Yeah, that's no problem. But,
You know what I look like anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I do, yeah. And it's not like this goes out as audio, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that to me is the explanation as to why he would, not be interested in Tatooine in terms of there's nothing else there, because he can't sense Luke either. Otherwise, he would know that there was a strong Force presence on Tatooine and Alderaan.
Yeah.
Because obviously, he's twins.
Does Obi-Wan think Vader is dead at the end of Revenge of the Sith?
I think so.
I could have sworn he said, "I will take the boy where Vader will not find him." But that's obviously false memory.
I think
that's not
the
dialogue. We must take them somewhere the Sith will not sense their presence. Sith.
Okay. So they could
split
be
up.
Both.
Split up, they should be. And Bail Organa says, "My wife and I will take the girl. We've always talked of adopting a baby girl. She'll be loved with us."
Yeah.
Obi-Wan says, "And what of a boy?" Yoda, "To Tatooine, to his family, send him."
Yep.
And Obi-Wan says, "I will take the child and watch over him. Master Yoda, do you think Anakin's twins will be able to defeat Darth Sidious?" And Yoda says, "Strong the Force runs in the Skywalker line. Hope we can. Done it is. Until the time is right, disappear we will."
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no reference to Vader.
No. And also, not for nothing, it would actually kind of fill in a plot hole that people have attributed, I think kind of falsely, from Revenge of the Sith, which is, why would you hide him in plain sight on a planet that Anakin has deep knowledge of? They don't necessarily think he's still about.
No.
They'd be forgiven for thinking he's
dead.
Just
because he couldn't kill him.
Yeah.
He
did leave him to burn.
He did, but it was because he couldn't bring himself to do it.
And he says, "You were my brother Anakin, I loved you."
Yeah.
In that moment, he's dead to him either way, both in the literal, both in the sort of, you know, proverbial and almost the literal
sense. Just take your lightsaber while I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. You know. And because he did yell, I think it's been retconned that he does yell, give it to him when he's old enough. So it's fine. You know, memes are canon.
Memes are canon, as of the Disney buyout.
Oh, man, what an absolute can of worms that would be.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for writing in, Arthur. Hopefully we've clarified that for you and answered that question.
I think it's possibly in the 19 years between Revenge of the Sith and New Hope, Obi-Wan does gather news of Vader still being a presence.
Maybe, yeah. But
he's pretty visual, isn't he? He's pretty kind of the face of the Empire.
That's not the impression I get. He's kind of.
Or maybe I'm Legends canoning it.
Maybe that. I think
because certainly he's seen walking around in the book you're reading.
Yes, Bail Organa sees him, and Bail Organa puts it together that clearly, you know, Anakin lives. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thing. Is that Anakin? How can it be? You know, from what I've been told, he shouldn't be walking around.
Mm.
That kind of thing. So, you know,
that reliable Obi-Wan, he never misled anyone.
Exactly, yeah. He's like, well, from a certain point of view, when I turned around, he was on fire. So there's that.
But I told you I had the high ground.
Yeah, exactly.
You keep saying that. What does that mean?
Yeah, that should be enough. Yeah, that's enough. Enough. Yeah. The high ground. End of discussion. End. Stop it. Take the girl. That little girl. Off you go. Yeah. Do one, mate. Off you go.
It's Ray Winston's Obi-Wan.
Ray Winston's Obi-Wan. I do see, like, people do seem to be kind of really desperate to find ways to make Obi-Wan leave Tatooine. And
The way Vader's kind of presented in Rogue One and A New Hope, he's not a visual presence, he's almost like Special Forces.
Yeah. He turns up where he's not going to be seen again.
In a TIE fighter. In Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader series, he's not kind of being like General Hux out in front of legions of troopers. You're right. He is.
He's kind of a sort of an enforcer rather than a.
He's almost. I get the impression he's kind of like the worst kept secret. There's probably stories about him.
Yeah.
Doing around across the Empire, but very few people actually ever see him.
I wonder if that's a kind of, you know, the way that's framed is almost like making a myth out of him in the universe. Mm. You know, but people are like, "Have you heard about this Darth Vader? Like, you know, he's kind of. They say he's 12 feet tall and all black and that sort of stuff. Like, well, you know.
I mean, going on Rogue One, they basically put him in a cupboard until they need him.
Yeah, exactly. He's spending most of his time on Mustafar, Bioflesh Regenerator. You know, it seems to be slightly better built than the Bioflesh Regenerator, but that's not hard, turns out. Anyway, Arthur, hopefully that's answered the question for you. That's clarified.
Hope you like tangents.
Yeah, hope you like tangents as well, because we do have a few of them. Crazy.
Star Wars.
Right, so our next question is from Adam K. I said there'd be one. Okay. Here it is.
Yay!
So, you did it? Adam asks, got a fun question for you both. If you were put into a Star Wars simulation, what species would you be? Actually, this is kind of, there's quite a lot of questions here.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want to do it one by one.
Rattle them all off and then we'll go back and do them one by one.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. So what species would you like to be? What would your profession be? So he's given a few examples: smuggler, bounty hunter, Sith Lord, Jedi, etc.
Okay.
What is your weapon of choice? And if lightsaber, what color blade?
Okay, very important.
What is your home planet? Now, obviously, some of the species lend themselves to specific planets, but obviously we can sort of, there are going to be some that are different. Right, so let's start with what species would you like to be?
So this is basically almost like doing Star Wars Old Republic, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, it's like creating a character from an MMO.
For a more poor or an RPG. Okay. I've never actually played Star Wars RPG as a PC. I've always kind of just GM'd it. I'd probably say human. Most of the best characters are human. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously lends itself into stuff like Corellian and
Jess.
Yeah, I suppose so. All the Iranian.
Yeah, Trissic.
I think humans are underrated in Star Wars because all our favourite characters are human.
It's true,
yeah.
You know, apart from the really diehard Akbar fans, but
There's a Chewy camp, I guess.
Yeah, there is. This is true. Team Chewy is pretty pretty well represented, I think. Species.
Team Low Grey, not so much.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's a very much more niche market, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think. I mean, I'm kind of like a Caminoan now. I've got the long neck. I'm quite tall and I'm a little bit unsteady on my feet and a bit swooshy.
Yeah. And you clone New Zealanders.
There is that too. Although, you know, I'd kind of prefer us to skirt over that just for, you know, just for ethical and legal reasons. Just because you never know who's listening. Like I say, we've had no reason to believe that Billy Dee Williams isn't listening. The same also goes for New Zealand authorities.
Yeah.
I don't know, being a zebra could be kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
With the sort of, you know, with the horns and stuff.
Yeah. You don't got to worry about receding hairline, do you?
No, this is true, and this is something...
Yeah, I should have thought of that. Damn it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, buddy. Just enjoy it while I can. Trying to think what else could be cool. I mean, it would be pretty funny to go from being this version of me to an Ewok.
Or an Ewok of your height.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
Just the only 6'7" Ewok in Wendell.
Did they build a power station near your village?
No, but something landed quite close.
Seven
Ewok would be genuinely terrifying.
Yeah,
because you know they are kind of cannibals.
It's kind of a Wookiee, isn't it? At that point,
yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. Am I right in thinking like the early drafts of Jedi was actually supposed to be shaped rather than Endor?
Yes. Yeah, the original Return of the Jedi. Well, in fact, I think the original Star Wars. I'm trying to remember this because this is from that Secret History of Star Wars book I read.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to recall the original plot of in Return of the Jedi it was Wookiees rather than Ewoks originally. Mm-hmm. I think even further back than that it was actually part of the plot of Star Wars and it got cut and used again in Jedi. I think it was originally supposed to be part of the first movie.
Okay.
And it was supposed to be part of the plot. I don't know how that would have worked. Maybe instead of Yavin 4 they would have gone there.
Maybe, yeah.
But it was supposed to be...
I like hearing mad first drafts. So.
Yeah. Oh, I really would. Yeah. I would dearly love to read it because I've read the comics. They did a comic, a Legends one of basically it's like the first screenplay he did, like the first proper one, which he then adapted a few times, and it was wildly different.
Yeah.
You know,
my favorite one. If you ever heard the first draft of Ghostbusters,
no.
The original Dan Aykroyd's original script, it was almost like a time cop type setup in the Ghostbusters would travel throughout time and go and bust ghosts. And you see, it was just like this outlandish, futuristic sci-fi series where people would travel back in time to bust ghosts and then travel back to a future to dump their traps. And it was actually Ivan Reitman said, you know, we could save a lot of money if you did kind of the genesis of the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And that's why they rewrote it to be set in like contemporary New York.
Okay, nice.
Just for budgetary reasons, because Dan Aykroyd's insane when you let him off the chain.
Yeah, I can imagine that there's a lot of considerations like that.
Yeah.
When you have to deal with, you know, imaginative actors.
Yeah, I love Dan Aykroyd. He shaped a lot of my favourite films when I was a kid. Keep him on a leash sometimes is a good idea.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's why I love hearing early drafts and just totally mad stuff.
And
you get it with cult films, obviously.
Yes.
There's an interest. All this stuff gets brought up in interviews and turns up in the IMDb trivia section.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. So, let's think. So next is, what would your profession be?
Oh, that's tough. Because I've just said human, but kind of like there's virtually anything I can do.
Yeah, you've very much left it open for you.
Yeah. Maybe... I thought I was opening like a privateer, stroke smuggler.
Yeah, I can see
actually. Yeah, it's kind of a free agent, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I could take on Imperial contracts, take on anything I wanted to do and just kind of make a living.
Mm-hmm.
Yourself?
I quite like the smuggling concept. Mm-hmm. Although it would kind of be cool to be a Lando style, you know, a bit of a hustler and then kind of, you know, looking for that, looking for that one, that one score that will then come good, and you can sort of settle down.
Just imagining a 6'7" Ewok in a cape.
Hello. Just that's it. Just hello. Yeah. That would be, yeah, my kind of answer would be like a Lando style. You know, you'd be going for the sort of the big gambles, and then it, once you got one that would pay off, you would settle down and sort of run it and do like a, make it into a kind of cool entrepreneur thing.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick from one of the ones that Adam supplied, Bounty Hunter, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That could be one, you know, you could do like
you could do
mercenary
jobs.
Work and then become a sort of gambler, be a gambler on the side. Works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like this. Yeah. What was the next one?
What is your weapon of choice?
I actually like the Blastec DL-44.
It is pretty cool, isn't it?
It's modeled on like the German Mauser pistol, which was a very highly sought after, almost like a trophy in the Second World War if you're an Allied troop. Who managed to get your hands on a German Mauser. It was quite prestigious.
Yeah.
And they were just well known for being... It looks kind of boxy and clunky in Star Wars.
It's a kit weapon, isn't it?
We know
the DL-44 is kit bash because we see it in Solo.
Yeah.
But isn't the Mauser it's based on similar?
Possibly.
Yeah. I feel like
an evolution of different bits bolted together. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, DL-44 is a good shot, I think.
Yeah.
And I think I'd probably want a pistol rather than an automatic, because if video games have taught me anything, it's you're better off with a semi-automatic rather than an automatic. It's just...
I'm picturing a 6'7" Ewok in a cape in one of the Ewok hang gliders.
Just pew, pew. Hello, pew.
Oh, this is horrible.
At the same time, I bet there are loads of people who want that now.
Oh yeah,
it's the standalone movie you didn't know you wanted until you heard it.
Hey, if anyone out there is, you know, just put it out there, if you want to try remaking The Last Jedi, this is how you do it.
Why not?
6'7" Ewok in a cape hang gliding.
Yeah, you know, just go balls to the wall. Like, just go out there.
If you're going to remake it, go nuts.
Go way out there. Why not?
Yeah.
Go nuts.
We're available.
Yeah, I'll totally. Yeah. So let me think. Gun wise, I mean, the Blastec DL-44 is a bit of a classic, so it's hard to top that. I'd probably go for something like a holdout blaster.
Okay.
One of those ones like
in the Kalkatarn one.
Yeah, like a Mara Jade style. One of the ones she'd wear in an elbow holster, that sort of thing. Because if you wanted to be like a bounty hunter, start gambling, you'd probably want something like that.
Yeah.
On your person rather than something big and bulky and you know, it's no good like sitting at the table going, I've got four aces and you're lying and you put a whacking great E-11 blaster rifle at it. What if I
just get my DLT-19 out of the boot?
Just wait while I set this up.
Yeah. It's nearly as big as an Ewok.
Yeah, exactly. It gets more elaborate every time we answer a question. Yeah, it's probably like a holdout blaster. I'm not sure if there's... Yeah. I can't think of any off the top of my head in terms of model numbers. I don't think there have been any in new canon.
It's actually amazing how many of the guns in Star Wars were just World War II guns with bits glued on.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Because the E-11 is a Sten gun.
Yeah.
And the DLT-19 is a German MG-42. I think they just glued some bits on it to make it look more sci-fi.
I can believe
it. But once you see it, you're just like, that's an MG-42.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, fair enough.
Someone's gonna email in now and get back to you. I think you're fine. It's an MG-34.
Yeah, maybe. You know.
It might be.
It might well be.
I can't remember if it's on the bike.
We're okay with standing corrected when we're wrong.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
If it's just a subjective thing, then forget it.
Yeah.
But if we've genuinely got something wrong, that's a different kettle of fish. I'll tell you what. Before we do the home planet one, if you were to have a lightsaber, what color blade would you have?
I once asked my wife that, and her answer was spotty, and that's the best answer I've ever heard to that question.
Okay. It's one themed after Super Ted characters, fair enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, tartan, maybe? Tartan.
Yeah, all right, I can go with that. I would say mine would probably be green.
I don't know if it's kind of a standard colour or one-off, but I love the Mandalorian black lightsaber.
Oh, that's the Darksaber.
It's just so awesome.
Yeah, very.
And it's
very
such
cool.
A simple idea as well, but when we actually first time you see it, it's like, what?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's something very kind of what's the word? It's got a presence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Green would be my personal pick because if you think about all the cool Jedi who've had it, obviously Jedi Luke, Qui-Gon, Ki-Adi-Mundi, I think. Maybe Plo Koon.
Yes.
Vought Klapchek.
Yoda's green, aren't we?
Yoda's green, yeah. Apart from that, just because that's probably one of my least favorite bits of the prequels is the
Yoda fighting like Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yoda fight like Sonic the Hedgehog, yeah. Everybody's like, oh, that was epic. When I saw it at the cinema, the theater was laughing it out of the room.
People didn't laugh when I saw it, but I was just kind of a bit, what?
Yeah,
I think it's almost just because it was also partly because I didn't believe that Yoda would fight with a lightsaber.
He'd be above, not above it, but like he'd have a better way.
Yeah,
like Sidious until Episode 3 was always kind of lightning only, and you know, lightning and politics was.
So yeah, the Emperor I could kind of buy into a fighting with a lightsaber. That kind of made sense to me more than Yoda did, because Yoda's. The Emperor is aggressive and spiteful, and Yoda we've always seen as peaceful and knowledgeable, and it just seemed quite jarring to see him fight. But I suppose, isn't that kind of part of the tragedy of the Clone Wars, that a peaceful religious order gets dragged into becoming generals in a war?
Yeah, kind of. You know, it, from a certain point of view, I guess, because I mean, the one of the running themes of the prequels is that the Jedi have become quite dogmatic and bloated and overextended.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Sith kind of, the rule of two for, you know, its faults, obviously it has its downsides, but one of the advantages of it is it's a lot more concentrated and a lot less unwieldy. So maybe that's kind of, that's one of the messages, I think, from that era.
It was one of those we expanded the universe took and kind of messed around, because the rule of two later in the expanded universe became more of a rule of two plus sort of four secret references each that you pretend you don't know about.
Yeah, much like Order 66 wiped out all the Jedi. Oh, except for these ones, and these ones, and these ones, and these ones.
I'm still waiting for some. I mean, they don't owe me an explanation. That's not a right term for it. But I would like to know more about exactly how the Inquisitors fit into the hierarchy.
Yeah, because if it's like an Asajj Ventress style thing where they're not a Sith, but they're sort of, you know.
Does Palpatine even know about them? Are they Vader's secret army?
Maybe. That might explain it, you know.
Yeah, like I said, they don't owe me an explanation. It's just something I'm curious about.
Yeah, they've never really delved into it, have they?
No.
I know what you mean. But, so you'd go for the Darksaber, you say?
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then final question, what is your home planet? Where's Lando from? Never clarified, is it?
I'll turn my screen off and find out. Going on what we saw in Solo, I really liked Corellia.
I liked Corellia.
I'd like to see more of that, to be honest. I might go Corellia.
I have a feeling if I was to be in the Star Wars universe playing the character I sort of alluded to earlier, I'd probably spend a fair bit of time on the Ring of Khafrin.
Okay.
That seemed like the kind of place that's probably a bit seedy and a bit kind of, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it turned up. If they did a Boba Fett movie, say, it wouldn't surprise me if it turned up. And in fact, one of the things they were doing that was doing the rounds as a rumor was that because they tend to, it's quite common for them to seed film locations that end up turning up later on in other media.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, people were saying like, oh, maybe Ring of Khafrin is sort of touched on now because it's going to be in Solo later. And I mean, if they do another Solo movie, that still might absolutely happen.
Yeah. Do we think that's going to happen, or is that a whole other kettle of fish?
Another Solo movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's something to this whole standalone projects is being rethought at the very least. I don't necessarily think they're on ice because, as you rightly pointed out at the time, how can you put something on ice when it's not confirmed?
Lando is from a planet in the Outer Rim territories called Socorro, which is only mentioned in Thrawn, Bottom of His Hand.
Oh, okay.
And also, it is featured in the Star Wars Force Awakens beginner game, which is a role-playing game from Fantasy Flight.
Okay, so
that's the only time it's been seen.
The reference stuff is canon in the sense that it's explaining things that really exist. Obviously, none of the games are canon because the Lord, We're talking about Kettle of Fish earlier. That would be a whole different ball game entirely if the, you know, forget memes, if the role-playing game sessions were canon as well. Man. Yeah.
When it was under the West End Games and the Wizards of the Coast license for pen and paper RPG, the stories were canon in the same way the video games were, and the events broadly happened.
Yeah.
But
you're doing the individual player
actions may not be.
Yeah.
As of the canon reboot and as of Fantasy Flight having a license, I honestly don't know what the canon status is. They may just be, I don't know that any of the stuff in Imperial Assault is considered canon, and those are essentially role-playing game scenarios. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think Fantasy Flight doesn't really get involved with canon. It just kind of goes, just go play with Star Wars toys.
Yeah, which is fair enough. You know,
that's absolutely fine. I'd much rather that than kind of a, is it or isn't it?
Maybe they do sort of take a very light approach with it, where it's to say, like, if we mention a planet in there, it's real. But we might not, you know, the details are the specific the details.
Might not be. Yeah.
Who knows? It's hard to say, really. But, okay. I don't really know anything about Sakurai, so I'm just going to steer clear of that one.
I'd say it's only seen in one game and only mentioned in passing on other books.
I think Naboo.
Naboo is lovely.
You know? Yeah, it's a nice, you know, it's got a nice mix of urban and rural areas.
Yeah.
Coruscant is obviously all urban, so that's no good. You need to get away.
A lot of chance of law and merchandise.
A lot of chance of law and merchandise, warming pegs. In like a weird gift shop that nobody really understands the purpose of.
Welcome to the Valorum Forum.
Naboo would be a good pick, I think.
Yeah.
It'd be my pick. Because I say it's got that sort of enough built up areas that you could work in the city, but it's got some remote bits you could sort of retreat out to.
Yeah,
the rest of the time that would suit me fine, and I could work on my, you know, Nubian podcast.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't think that's what you're looking for. Corellia, I really think.
Yeah,
I'd go with that. I think.
Cool, nice, good answer. Right, so Adam writes, look forward to hearing your answers. Well, I hope that's still true.
There they are.
Yeah, I hope that you enjoyed those. Best, Adam K. Thank you, Adam. He emailed, so as part of his email, I didn't include it in the show notes, but he did say, you know, let me know if I'm bothering you, because I don't want to be that one who writes in a question a week. I said, be that person, like write us in a question every week. You can't bother a listener focused podcast.
No, just pitch in, man.
Yeah,
We're kind of the hosts of this, but you guys are a large part of the show.
Totally.
If sometimes, to be honest, you're all at the show.
There have been weeks where that's happened.
Don't ever feel, not just Adam, it's everyone, don't feel like you're bothering us. If you want to rant at us, if you want to correct us, if you want to correct my knowledge on World War II machine guns, if you want to have a rant at us for some point of... I've got a machete order wrong or something, then just pitch in and just throw fun stuff at us, because it's your forum, really.
Totally. Yeah, this is the whole ethos of this stuff. And if look at it this way, if we wanted to not be bothered and be left to it, one, we wouldn't broadcast to a public forum. We wouldn't have an email. We wouldn't have a Twitter. We wouldn't have a Facebook.
Yeah,
we put all these communication messages.
It's fair for you.
Yeah, it's fair game. Just go nuts.
Yeah, please, go on, pitch it. And any of you guys who are listening to the show, listened to a few episodes now and thought about writing it but haven't, do. Just send us whatever. Just go nuts.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Exactly right. All right, so...
we want to hear from you.
Yeah, so that's our listener portion of the show. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we've got a few bits of Star Wars news to get through.
Cool.
And we're back. So now it is time for some Star Wars news.
The best type of news.
Yeah, there's not a huge amount here, but we can talk about what we got.
It won't be for another year.
No, it's okay. Yeah, we can talk about what we got, though, because there are a few bits. And
cool.
We'll start with, Brad, you picked up on something just before we started recording.
I did, Fantasy Flight Games.
Yes.
Just posted an announcement on their Facebook page, and there's also a blog post on their main website as well. Mm-hmm. They're doing a reprint of the first edition of the West End Game Star Wars role-playing game.
Ah, yes. Is it 30th anniversary?
It is the 30th anniversary. It came out in 1987, I think, originally. So, allowing for tabletop gaming delays, it's the 30th anniversary. anniversary.
Yeah, nice.
And it is a kind of a piece of gaming history, and certainly also a piece of Star Wars history, because a lot of what became the expanded universe actually started off as role-playing game source materials.
Okay.
To the point when Timothy Zahn was writing the Thrawn trilogy, he was working off a lot of role-playing game source books.
Ah.
And certainly for guys like the Mos Eisley Cantina patrons, all the species names came from the role-playing game.
Yeah.
Because they were just called...
Walrus Man
and Snakehead and stuff like that. They weren't Ithorians or... They just called them convenient kind of... action figure names, and this made it much more of a deep sci-fi setting.
Made it more tangible.
It's published in a slipcase, so you get a reprint of the main rulebook and the first source book as well, which will flesh out a lot of the background. I own the second edition.
Oh yeah,
set here, which is kind of a polished update of that. Yeah, I got very lucky on eBay on this because I think I picked it up for like a tenner on eBay, and I was like, that doesn't look like that's ever been opened. Yeah, it creaked when I opened it. I wasn't the first person to open it. Yeah,
that is lucky.
The system is one of my favourite role playing game systems as well. Even aside from it being Star Wars, I think it's just an incredibly simple system.
Yeah,
it's just a target number, and you, for each point of your skill, you have one d6 and you have one bonus d6 which represents the force, and you just make the roll, and if you hit the target number then you're successful. If a force dice comes up a 6, it explodes and you can keep rolling it. If it comes up a 1, it means you're kind of successful, but something unfortunate happens as well. Kind of like Han would successfully sneak up behind a stormtrooper but then step on a twig as well.
Which does work out, but it's not an immediate, the obvious success.
So, I think we played it once, and you had a Jedi character, didn't you?
Yes. Oh, the drunk Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah, you jumped on the back of like a land speeder, which was almost like, had a machine gun hooked to it, almost like a technical.
Yeah.
And you made the roll, but got a 1 on the force dice, and you kind of landed in the back seat, knocked the stormtrooper out, and sent the gun spinning round, and I just rolled it, came back round and clubbed you on the back of the head again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which does kind of feel quite Star Warsy.
It does, yeah. It's very good at genre emulation, which I'm a huge fan of in tabletop gaming. For me, that's what drives a decent game to me, is genre emulation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's certainly, it's much more enjoyable. I mean, I've got a limited amount of experience in playing role-playing games, but from what I've found, the more enjoyable ones are the ones where I'm immersed.
Yes. Definitely feels Star Wars when you're playing it. It's because I think because it's simple, it's fast moving, it's pulpy, which is what some of the best bits of Star Wars are.
Well, there you go. That kind of classic Star Wars feel.
I don't know if they're going to do any. I can't believe they're going to do any like expanded expansions or follow ups for it. I think it is a nostalgia piece because they have their own role playing system. They've invested a lot of time and money, and a lot of fans have invested a ton of money as well. But if you're after like a collector's item, and we'll want to see what the first edition looked like, it's certainly, I think it'd be a fun purchase.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
Like I say, no disrespect to Wizards of the Coast Engine or the current system Fantasy Flight uses, but I keep coming back to this one.
This is what you think of it. Yeah, this is what you're thinking of when you think of it.
Yeah, and also for me, it's relatively easy to kind of retrofit as well. So I can buy a scenario for Fantasy Flight's current system, and all I've got to do is there's no like maths required because the Stormtrooper is just, I just swap the Stormtrooper stats for the Stormtrooper stats in this edition.
Yeah.
It's very easy to kind of carry across. Nice. If you do want to get into this system, there is a lot of fan made material that covers all of the prequels and some of the sequel trilogy as well, I think. So if you did want to do First Order Republic or First Order Resistance role-playing campaigns using the system, Google is your friend. They will be fan-made.
Oh, almost, yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense. You know, it's exactly the kind of thing that fans like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's a fun nostalgia piece. I think.
Sounds like a fun purchase if you've got some appreciation for this stuff.
Yeah.
Tell you what, let's stick with gaming actually, because the next piece, there's another piece in here. So, EA released the roadmap for the later half of the year for Battlefront 2. And there's
a roadmap
is basically their release plan. So,
oh, okay, cool.
For the rest of the year. So, in July, there's going to be a significant update to Hero Starfighters. So okay. That's things like, I guess, Luke in an X-Wing rather than a standard no-name pilot X-Wing.
Okay. Maybe the, yeah.
I guess that suggests
Ben Quadrineros.
Yeah, Ben Quadrineros. Maybe we get the showdown we really always wanted, yeah. Which is him and Timoteo Pallaglies. The showdown, the standalone movie you didn't know you wanted till you heard it.
No.
So there's that's coming in. That's the July update. So that's the first big one. The first significant one I think people are going to be excited about is Obi-Wan and General Grievous as playable heroes.
Oh,
yeah.
Those are two characters I really like.
Yes. Well, I mean, General Grievous will have some interesting gameplay considerations, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Some balancing questions I'm sure they will have to answer fairly swiftly if they're to keep fans engaged.
Yeah. Okay.
In the fall, there's going to be a new, quotes, large-scale mode. So large scale suggests kind of
battle royale.
I mean, it could be
everyone else's.
It does seem like everybody else's. I sort of hope they hold fire on making it a straight up battle royale mode. I would like to see them maybe explore a kind of last man standing mechanic, but maybe in a bit more of a Star Wars way.
Yeah.
Rather than just doing the straight, you know, rather than a battle bus, it's a battle freighter, like
or the train.
Yeah. It's like
what was called the
ConveyX. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
ConveyX.
Yeah.
That would work quite well.
So I'm just checking my,
actually, yeah.
Checking my daughter's reference guide.
Ah. Ultimate sticker collection.
Ultimate sticker collection.
Yeah.
She's obsessed with it.
Oh, well, I can imagine. She's, you know.
Yeah.
She's a small child.
We've been doing two stickers a day and she gets really excited when we do that.
Yeah, nice.
She has said Han once as well, which is like, I'm doing daddy properly.
Yeah, so the large-scale mode, there's not really much detail on what that's going to entail, but it could be, let's say, it could be a battle royal mode, kind of something along those lines. I sort of hope, like I say, if they're going to do that, I'd hope they take a different tack with it, make it a bit more, you know, a bit more interesting than just the standard. Because I really feel like we're going to hit a critical mass with this soon. Because the attention span, collective attention span of the video game tropes are very short now, almost approaching singularity.
I mean, I think Battlefront is the only really online game I play, and even I'm like, I don't really want a Battlefront. Battle Royale.
I've played a bit of, you know, I played a few games of Fortnite, and it's fine. It's a perfectly good game in terms of how it functions. The problem I have with it is I spend 2 minutes loading the game. Including the sort of, you know, the loadout period, getting on the bus, flying down onto the island. I spend 2 minutes doing that, up to 10 minutes wandering around, get shot in 3 seconds, and then I've got to load back and go start all over again. Because it's once you're done, when you're done, you're done. So, you know, you go back to the lobby and you start all over again. The way I've found myself getting the highest position in the rankings is to not play the game. It's to jump out of the bus and immediately open my parachute, float down at the slowest speed possible, by which point it's down to about 15 out of 100 because everybody else has been killed because they've gone down and started fighting.
So it's almost like the Normandy landings, really.
Kind of, yeah. The longer you leave it, the more likely you are to actually walk away unscathed up until the last minute. So it doesn't, to me, that's not a multiplayer experience I'm going to go for on a regular basis. What I'd like to see, is similar to what they've done with this Ewok Hunt mode. Are you familiar with that one?
No, I haven't played that yet.
So it's basically a survival horror.
Last time I switched my PlayStation on, it was doing a massive Battlefront update, so it's probably waiting for me.
It's basically like a survival horror. And the whole point of it is to go hunting Ewoks. And it's dark, and you've only got torchlight, and they're there to sort of slash you up.
This sounds almost better than the Friday the 13th game.
It's almost like, I was going to say, it's like a Friday the 13th Dead by Daylight kind of mechanic.
I've got to play that.
Apparently
that sounds
it's amazing. Yeah, apparently it's really fun.
Okay.
But
have you got it on PS4?
Have I?
Yeah.
No, I haven't got it at all.
No, okay. No. I thought you did.
I played the trial of the Xbox One because I have the EA Access Pass, which gives you 10 hours, but it only gives you 10 hours.
I was just thinking me and you doing that could be fun. That's all.
That could be fun. I might have to explore a cheap copy. I'll make a note of that as something to explore further. Anyway, so there's more to come. So in the winter, they're going to add another planet to the list of locations, which would be Geonosis.
Okay, fine.
And two more playable heroes, Anakin and Dooku.
All right, cool.
Yeah, nice. So it goes to Geonosis. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Geonosis, I could see being a fun map. I remember liking the Geonosis levels on Republic Commando.
Yeah, I wonder if which bit of it they do. Would they do the droid factory or would they do like the Colosseum?
I went to like running around the tunnels.
Yeah, maybe like maybe the Colosseum as part of the arena, and then like the tunnels leading up to it and stuff.
Yeah,
that might work. So yeah, Anakin and Dooku are coming out alongside those, and that's basically going to take us through to Christmas.
Yeah, it seems to be going a bit more prequel friendly on the Battlefront.
Very much so. I played a bit of the, because obviously, let's say I've got this 10-hour pass. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is because I don't think there's 10 hours of gameplay in the story, in the campaign. Okay. So they lock the campaign off after about 3 or 4 missions, which I can understand. Okay. I can understand, but it obviously leaves you with 8.5 hours of multiplayer in the trial.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Clone Wars stuff started dropping in, I thought, oh, I'll jump in and have a go. I'll tell you what, the Clone Wars, the prequel era Starfighter stuff is really fun.
Yeah, I haven't played for a while, actually. I should blow the dust off the controller.
Doing like was it called the Planetary Assault one, where you do the 3 stages of...
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah, they did a bit of that with Clone Troopers versus...
In the previous one, I really liked you taking down the ATAT scenarios. That's one of my favourite stuff felt cinematic.
Yeah, the Walker Assault stuff.
Yeah, Walker Assault, thank you. That's
The assault one is, like I say, I played Clone Wars, Clone Troopers versus Battle Droids, and that was tremendous fun.
Okay. I'm enjoying the storyline for Battlefront at the moment. Playing through the campaign.
I liked what I played of it.
I'm playing as Lando at the moment, though, so nice. That's kind of a bonus
point. That helps. Yeah, that helps a lot. But I've gone, you know, I've been through a little bit of the actual game myself, and then I've read and sort of, you know, filled in the blanks on the rest of the story, because obviously it helps to know. Plus, when you're the admin of all the spoiler groups, stuff happens.
Yeah.
Pretty much what I'm
not as well. It's a bit of fun.
Oh, that Twilight Company.
Yes.
Yeah. I've not read it. I'll have to give it a go. Nice.
So the original Battlefront book was really good as well. It was almost like a bit Full Metal Jackety.
What was the...
It just kind of followed the squad through...
Was that Twilight Company? It was.
Yes, that Twilight Inferno Squad. Inferno Squad was good. Twilight Company is quite Full Metal Jacket. It just kind of follows the squad doing their thing.
Okay.
That's really good.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what my favourite one of the new canon books would be. I think Bloodline, probably.
Bloodline is really good.
I've heard good things about Lost Stars. I've never read
Lost Stars is probably my favourite. Yeah.
I've not finished Tarkin either, so.
It's not on Kindle as a trouble. Lost Stars is. I'd buy an iBooks. Other online retailers are available, but I believe, to the best of my understanding, Lost Stars is iBooks exclusive. It's paperback and hardback as well.
Yeah. In terms of digital format, it's exclusive.
So I'm not reading it on my phone in the end. And Lost Stars is probably my favourite.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, let's say I really like Bloodline. There were bits I liked about, like, I liked Catalyst a lot, mainly because it had a lot of Krennic and Galen Erso, which worked for me.
I read it before I saw Rogue One, and I'm kind of wondering if I should go back now I've seen Rogue One and kind of pick it up more that way, because a lot of times I was hearing names like Krennic and Erso, but there's no context.
No.
From the military beyond knowing, you know, it was a guy from the Bond movies, that's all I knew.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Odd job, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
No one can correct me in my mind.
So the other piece of Star Wars news that came out this week is, it's a rumour, but it's got a fairly good base to it.
Okay.
So a source connected to the Cardington airship sheds in Bedfordshire has reported that it's looking increasingly likely that Episode 9 will record there.
Okay.
So the history behind it is that they used that as the set for Yavin 4. In New Hope and Rogue One. And I believe...
Which is weird, because it's just a hangar, you know.
Yeah.
You could do it anywhere.
You could, this is true. The guy who reported this, the source they kind of cited, is actually the guy who broke that it was being done for Rogue One as well.
Okay,
he was the guy who announced it in the first place.
So are we going back to Yavin, we think, or just somewhere that's supposed to make us think of Yavin?
I don't know. I wonder if we might be, you know, because if you think about it, the resistance is kind of now going
to
be...
Crate was, let's be honest, supposed to make us think of Hoth.
Yes, it was. This is true.
Yeah, so is it going to be we actually are back on Yavin, which would tie in with what I said last week about some kind of closure and cohesion.
Yes.
Tie some threads together.
Because
we don't know what happened to Yavin before or after the assault on the Death Star.
We presume
it had to be abandoned because... Yeah. It had been discovered, yeah, and the Empire blew up Bothawui as well, I think, and didn't happen. That was a game me and him played.
Yeah, so
there's, but you know, it's been 30-odd years. Could they go back there again?
I think they could. You know, again, it's going to be one. I think the theme of Episode 9 is going to be desperation. If it depends on how they play it. If they play it, which I think it would be ill-advised, but if they play it. Following on really shortly after Episode 9, that would be desperation would be a theme. If they give it time and do a jump sort of 5-10 years in the future, then they wouldn't have to do that, and in which case it might just be kind of rebuilding what was there before.
Yeah.
Yavin is a kind of, it's a functional base, most likely left a lot of stuff in place.
Yeah.
A bit dilapidated.
Do you want them to jump straight on, or do you want to do a time jump?
I think time jump is the only one that makes sense.
I think up to 10 years time jump, possibly.
Yeah. If for no other reason, then you need some sort of time jump, because otherwise you just pick up with a dozen resistance people on board the Falcon just having an argument.
And a lot of the problems I had is kind of not enough is explained in between Force Awakens and Last Jedi. And if there's a, give us a bit of breathing space, even if we don't get it straight away, so there's some space for the books and comics and audio dramas and video games to fill up that gap and give us a bit more substance, and it won't feel as rushed as 7 and 8 did.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, give us a bit of breathing room. Give the characters breathing and development room. Let us wonder what happened to Kylo Ren in those 5-10 years. Let us wonder what Rey did in those 5-10 years.
Yeah, we can make some pretty good, pretty strong kind of predictions. Like Rey will go away and train in the Force, and that will be fine. And that will actually be kind of nice that she'll have had some time to hone it.
Yeah, but it's if they do another one straight off the bat. The prequel trilogy covers, what, 12, 15 years, I think? 32?
Yeah, I guess
32
so.
BBY to 19 BBY. What's 32 minus 13, 19? 13,
14? 14 years, yeah.
Yeah, so it goes 13, 14 years. The original trilogy covers 4.5 years, I think.
About that, yeah.
3 years between New Hope and Empire and 18 months between Empire and Jedi.
I think it
used to be. It might have shifted a little bit.
I don't think it's explicitly kind of nailed down to within months, but I think it is kind of 1 to 2 years.
I can't have the entire sequel trilogy take place over a fortnight.
Couple of weeks. Yeah, it does seem like a bit far-fetched, doesn't it?
That makes it feel like it's too rushed.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit. And like I said, I want cohesion, and that kind of rushed pace and that compression doesn't fit in with the rest of the saga.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I think that's, you know, the time jump is the only thing that works for me is in terms of how they reconcile the quite abrupt nature of Episode 8's ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ends on very much a downer, you know, and very as a result, they need to build back up, and they need to take time to establish, you know, people have said, I've seen this pop up on Twitter a couple of times, that there are ways of explaining the lack of contact from the Republic and the other cells of the resistance as they just couldn't get there in time. And I can dig that, because they do acknowledge that a transmission was received. It just wasn't acted upon. No response. Yeah. Doesn't mean that people weren't trying to, you know, weren't wanting to help, just because they didn't. So that side of things, I have no problem if they were to turn around and say, okay, you know, it's like a, it would be a bit of a, it would feel a bit like a retcon, but it's not really. Certainly, it's a perfectly conceivable one. That, oh well, they did, you know, they did here, but there was nothing they could do. They were busy fighting the First Order where they were. So, you know, once everything calmed down, they were able to act on it. Fine, you know, it's very clear that the beginning of Episode 8, kind of the crawl specifically mentions that the First Order has suddenly sprung up with all these, you know, these all these sort of cells that have been sitting underground just kind of spring up and start striking and start taking over. It's conceivable that resistance cells are going to be in guerrilla warfare.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
So that side of things, I don't have any problem swinging with. I can reconcile that quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the time jump is the only thing that works for me in terms of, you know, like I say, there's already kind of,
Ray's had a hell of a month.
Exactly. You know, let her have some time to absorb what she's actually learned and make it a bit more credible, because it's at the moment,
it's rushed.
It's rushed. And if you then go on to say, right, not only, you know, we're going to carry on, she's going to get even more.
I kind of wish they hadn't carried straight on with eight.
Yeah.
And it was only because of that stupid cliffhanger ending.
Yes, yeah. Which in hindsight is even more kind of, you know. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, you know, they need to. One of the things that people kind of balked at is how quickly Rey went from naught to strong. And I can understand that. And I can understand that kind of concern.
I'm still hoping there's an in-universe explanation for it.
There may well be. And, they may just stick with darkness rises and light to meet it. Thus, she's being kind of bulked up because she's the only one that's there to sort of be kind of bumped up. Which is
kind of have some...
You can sort of understand it.
There's kind of previous for that, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because realistically, Luke shouldn't have been able to hold his own at Cloud City.
Yeah.
Against Vader. So is there something in that light becomes more powerful than the presence of the dark?
Yeah. Yeah. This is it. No, it's time, just to kind of reiterate, time jump is the only thing that works for me. And like I say, it solves a lot of the problems with the movie. Because like I say, I think we touched on this last week. For Finn to go from having a lightsaber in his, you know, up his spine to being able to walk around within a couple of hours, that's what?
Yeah.
You know, why? What? Why? I don't understand.
Because
it's very quickly afterwards that he's able to sort of get up in his back to suit.
Back to a wonderful thing.
But it's not that
good. Not Vader. Yeah.
But like Luke was, you know, Luke took a while to heal up and all he got was raked across the face by Wampa and sort of hypothermia.
Yeah.
But then once you get in the warm, plus, he also, not for nothing, he's on Hoth. Like, he's probably got a bit of conditioning by now.
Yeah.
You know, so he's in his thermals for most of that. So it's just kind of exposure that does it.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of wandering aimlessly, probably quite hungry.
I agree. He probably wasn't beaten up as bad as Finn was.
No. But, and like I say, and yet he was in back for some time.
Because there's not a lot of things stop a lightsaber. No. Certainly not a spinal column.
A spinal column, unless it's made of... Yosalamiri.
Mandalorian iron,
Unless he's at party Salamiri. Unless he's party Salamiri. Like, it's not happening, right?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
I looked this up as part of another conversation. I think there's actually only three things stop a lightsaber, which is Mandalorian iron. Another lightsaber.
Yep.
And weapons that disperse force, which is why the riot control baton and General Grievous's bodyguard stuff can stop lightsabers.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. But yeah, it's, you know, to me, there's no other way to make it work other than a time jump. But at the same time, if they can find a way to make it work, I will give it a go. But for me, it's the only way that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're all on board whatever they do.
Sure.
It's just we're kind of throwing our ideas at JJ and come in. And, you know, as far as we know, he listens to the show.
Exactly. You know, there's no reason not to. Certainly.
Can't disprove the opposite.
Exactly. It's very difficult to do that.
If he was going to listen to any of the Star Wars podcasts out there, I mean, I'd recommend this one.
I'd say so. I mean, two people just this week have said it's the best.
Yeah.
So, you know, totally. I think you should take that as it's intended, you know, and just kind of go with that as the de facto. So, you know.
Yeah.
There you go.
So if you're listening, JJ, which we believe you are.
Yeah, we're more than happy to consult on this movie.
We believe in you.
Yeah, exactly. And we're more than happy to offer our services as consultants.
Yeah, and if you want to have a go at a Star Wars RPG, that'd be a fun evening.
That would be that'd be so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. Right, well, that's all our news pieces. Cool. Do you have any kind of other stuff you want to throw into the mix, or do you want to wrap it
up. I've got nothing. Okay,
cool. No, that's fine. I mean, everything I have is in the notes. So
I sent you the RPG reprint. That was all I had. Yep. And that was, I think that was about 5 minutes before we started recording.
Yeah, so it's not in the notes, but it is on Fantasy Flight's website. Yeah. So you can check that out there. Well, there you go. Thank you very much for listening to episode 126 of Talk Star Wars.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've already forgotten half the stuff we talked about, such as the nature of being in the moment. But,
there's a really tall Ewok at some point. That's all I can remember.
That's true. That got very weird very fast. But thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars. If this is your first time and you've enjoyed the show, we are available to subscribe on all good podcatchers and Apple Podcasts as well. So that's always nice. Still waiting back to hear from Spotify, but I'm hoping it will be sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
But we are on things like iHeart, Stitcher, Podbean and all that, Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker. Like I say, there's so much.
Libsyn?
Libsyn, no. Okay. You have to be hosted by Libsyn to be on Libsyn, I think.
Fine. Okay, I'll keep quiet.
Yeah, Emotionally 14 is on Libsyn, but not Talk Star Wars.
I must be where I got it from, sorry.
We're on most things. I'll say Spotify is the only real holdout at the moment, so I'm working on that behind the scenes. So hopefully I'll have some progress on that in the not too distant future.
That'd be lovely.
That would be nice.
Lovely royalties.
Yes. Well, such is, you know, maybe. But
yeah, who knows?
Yeah, right. I've yet to see a penny from anything else, but you know, that's kind of a theme. So there you go. So
it'll be the twin it.
Yeah, this is true. And you can also find everything we're doing on talkstarwars.co.uk. Obviously, all the new episodes go up there. We have a Twitter at Talk Star Wars, a Facebook page, Talk Star Wars.
Yep.
Brad, where?
Tumblr?
Yes, we do. Talk Star Wars on Tumblr, yeah.
I'm disappointed in this.
it's an auto-update. It pulls the show notes for it. So.
Pinterest?
No.
Instagram?
Yes, at Talk Star Wars. Okay. Yes.
Bebo?
Don't think so.
No. Face Party?
No Face Party.
Vero?
No.
Vine?
No.
I don't think Vine's a thing anymore, is it?
I think it's been folded down.
I think it got kind of bitten by Instagram, who basically started doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At that point, if you've already got a user base and you start doing that, it's kind of, you're done. Where can people find you on social media between shows?
You can search for Brad Harmer Barnes on Facebook, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at RealBradHB. And you can, of course, buy my wonderful books through Amazon.
Yes, you can. And you can do so using the Talk Star Wars Amazon widget, which is available on talkstarwars.co.uk.
You should.
It's also, if you like the Facebook page, it's in the pinned post as well. The Amazon link. So you can do that there too. So you can definitely check out Brad's books. You can buy all your Star Wars stuff on Amazon. Doesn't cost you any extra, and we get a little bit of love in return. So that's always nice.
I keep forgetting, I'm on Audible as well.
Yes, you are. In fact, I've just recently finished Vietnam Black on Audible. It's most enjoyable.
I've heard parts of it. I've heard it. I think the narrator did a really good job from what
he
I've
did.
Heard.
Absolutely. So the other thing to mention, of course, is the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Which includes, among others, well, in fact, I've got the whole list here this time, so there's not going to be any of these problems where I'm having to second guess myself and make sure I didn't forget one. Got it here. So obviously there's Talk Star Wars. Also includes Tumbling Saber.
Pretty good.
Generation X-Wing.
Yeah, I like that.
Rogue Squadron.
Not done them yet.
No, they're worth. They're worth
I'll add, they're just called Rogue Squadron.
Rogue Squadron podcast. Yeah.
Okay, I'm putting that on my
video games, Star Wars, and they drink beers as well, and they sort of have the kind of, you know, like a sommelier type thing where they're sort of trialing out different beers and things.
Okay,
but it's Star Wars and video games are their main points of discussion. They do.
Is that them?
Yep, that's them.
Okay, cool. I've now subscribed to them as well.
Nice. Skyhoppers. This is a good exercise anyway, because you've got a live subscription going on right now.
Skyhoppers podcast.
Yep, that's the one.
Cool, right, yep.
The Nerd Room. you'll dig them. They're Marvel, DC, and Star Wars. Very comics heavy.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I think that's him. Yep. Nerd Room, Star Wars Commonwealth one. Yep. Yeah, okay. Subscribing to all of these, you guys better buy my books.
Seems only fair. Yeah. San Diego Sabres radio podcast.
Oh god, it just keeps going on.
Oh yeah, so I think
San Diego Sabres. That sounds like a football team.
Yeah, it's a radio podcast, but it's actually a lightsaber combat group.
Getting audio books down at this rate.
It's a lightsaber combat group.
Oh, that does sound interesting. Is that work better as video? Sure, I don't know.
They do videos, but actually the podcasts are really interesting because they do. Yeah. They have a really different take on it that you don't normally get from podcasts, which is kind of cool.
Okay, cool.
Tatooine Sons.
Oh, I'm never going to get to keep up with Archers at this rate. What was one you just said, sorry?
Tatooine Sons.
I've got a feeling I'm on that one already.
I think you might be.
I keep getting a load of tattoo podcasts coming up. Again, you think that's more of a visual medium, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would.
Tatooine Sons.
Yep.
I'm not subscribed. I must just heard an odd episode. Okay, yeah, that's...
And then the last one is Less Than 12 Parsecs.
Fewer.
It's not his fault.
Less than...
Not Tim's fault.
Less than 12. Is it a numeric 12?
No, it's written.
Is it that one?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, it's numeric, isn't it? Right, okay. Oh, sorry, no more. There can't be any more on the...
On the network.
No.
Some of them are Emotionally 14 endorsed.
Okay.
Obviously, you can find them on emotionally14.com as well as us. We're on there.
Yeah. I might start doing my own podcast.
Can if you want.
No, purely because then I'll get a lot of these people be guilt tripped into following me back as well.
Yeah, you know, nepotism is very much a thing in the podcasting world. I've done very well out of it. speaking of me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision.
You can.
That's well worth doing. And actually, Instagram is a bit more active recently because I got a new phone. So, you know, I've taken a few more photos to sort of test it out.
Yeah, I saw it. Looks good.
It's a great phone. It's really nice.
Nearly as good as my dad, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not even competing. I'm not thinking of it as competition just because you can have the best tools, but you still need to have the good subject matter and stuff.
I mean, my dad's got 1,300 followers on Instagram.
I know. It's awesome.
It's really just like I only got him into it about a year ago, and he had to be like almost physically coerced into signing up.
And
he's really enjoying it.
He's got two accounts.
Yeah. And more followers than me on either of them.
Same. But anyway, that's the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. So Talk Star Wars, Tumbling Saber, Gen X Wing, The Nerd Room, Skyhoppers, Rogue Squadron, San Diego Sabres, Tatooine Sons, and Less Than 12 Parsecs are all on the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network.
Cool.
And you can find out all about that at StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world.
Will do.
Thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars.
You're welcome.
And may the Force be with you.